So what happened, Gaucher? What'd you do?
Shrugging, he tried to remember. What always seems to happen when I'm under attack? I was trying to summon my sword, and then something from deep inside me grabbed a hold of me. Next thing I know, you're yelling at me to not use those powers. I kill a bunch of stuff, and then you yell at me again for not listening to you. Caleb didn't appear nearly as amused by his explanation as Cody did.
You need someone to yell at you.
Nick snorted. Got plenty of volunteers for that job. Really don't need any more. Caleb made a sound of supreme annoyance. Is he awake? Cody stepped back so that his mother could run to the bed and throw herself over him. Nick grunted as his mother struck one of his sore ribs.
Ma, you're killing me.
She lifted her head to glare at him.
Good, I want to kill you. I swear, Nick, you're going to be the death of me.
A stab of pain lacerated his heart at her words. It was a bad reminder of why Ambrose was doing this. To keep his mother alive from whatever he'd done that had gotten her killed. Guilt gnawed at him. Not just over what he'd done in the past to hurt her, but over whatever future stupidity he was going to commit. He'd put her through enough. He didn't want to do anything else to make her cry.
I'm sorry, Mom. No, baby, I'm the one who's sorry. When I told you not to fight, I didn't mean for you to not protect yourself. I never, ever meant for that.
Her words confused him even more. But, Mom, all my fights are me defending myself. I never throw the first punch. She grimaced at him.
Why didn't you ever tell me that?
His indignant anger begged him to lash out at her for that comment, but he held it back.
I've tried repeatedly, and all you do is don't butt Mom me, Nick, and then you refuse to hear anything I say.
Sniffing, she swallowed hard.
I'm sorry about that, Boo. I'm going to try and do better, I promise. And you can fight anytime you want, okay? Just don't let them hurt you like this ever again. I'd much rather bail you out of jail than put you in a cemetery.
Better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6, Dr. Burdett said from behind her. That's always been my motto, and it's the one I raised Michael on. I told him that I would never get onto him for defending himself, but if I found out he backed down from someone out of fear, his back porch was going to be pink.
Michael?
His mom asked.
Nick snickered. Bubba.
Dr. Burdett made a painful moan.
Please don't call him that. I cringe every time I hear it.
His mom frowned.
Why do you hate it so? I've known a lot of good Bubbas.
Dr. Burdett made an irritated sound in the back of her throat.
Lucky you, Charisse. My animosity goes all the way back to my first day of school. Bubba Clark, may he roast his tenderloins in the devil's hottest pit. There I was, all pristine in my white handmade dress my mama had worked so hard on. I felt like a fairy tale princess. Had my little pale yellow hat and a matching patent leather purse. I thought I was the cat's meow, and I felt all pretty and girly. Next thing I know, I get shoved from behind and fall, scuffing my purse, my shoes, and putting dirt on my dress. Even worse, that little rat refused to apologize for it. Being the child I was, I laid into him with everything I had. And I might have been a little girl in a frilly pinafore dress, but I had 3 older brothers who taught me how to lay a man low, and sister, that day I did. I had him on the ground, crying like a baby after milk. Therein started a rivalry that goes on to this day. Bubba Clark has made me miserable any time he can, right down to pretending to be a policeman when I was on dates with Michael's father. Any time we kissed, he'd shine his light in our windows, until the day Bruce beat the tar out of him for it. So I cringe whenever I hear the name, and the fact that Michael would use it. I'm going to start calling him Mickey again just to watch him make the faces. That'll learn him.
Nick laughed, then groaned as a stabbing stitch went through his middle.
You all right, huh?
Dr. Burdett asked before placing her hand over his abdomen.
Yeah, I got kicked pretty good a few times.
Yes, you did. Do you know who did this?
Instead of answering that question, Nick found a new fascination with the ceiling.
Baby,
his mom said, brushing his hair back from his forehead.
Answer Dr. Burdett's question so that we can file a police report.
While he wasn't happy with what Bristol had done, he didn't want him to go to jail over it either. Bad things happened whenever kids from his school got locked up. Besides, he could handle this on his own. Had he not been so sore from his mother's reaming, this wouldn't have happened anyway. He and Bristol would have tossed words, maybe a few punches. In the end, they both would have walked home, so no. He didn't want to see Bristol in jail for this.
I don't remember.
Gah, how he hated lying, especially to his mom.
Nick.
He cringed at her tone, which said she knew he wasn't being honest.
I just can't, Mom.
She narrowed her gaze at him before she sighed.
Fine, I can't force it out of you, but I think you're making a mistake. You let someone get away with this, and they'll keep hurting people until someone stops them.
And normally that someone would be he. Squeezing his hand, his mother stepped back.
By the way, I've been told that you're the most popular patient on the floor.
How so?
There's a herd of folks outside wanting to see you, and all of them worried about you. The nurses said that they get calls all day and night asking about you, and that if you think this,
she pointed to the all-out florist in his room,
is a lot of flowers, you haven't seen anything. They had to store some of them in the staff offices.
Wow, it was a lot of flowers.
You sure they're not thinking I'm dead and sending them to the funeral home?
She scoffed.
You're so bad.
Yeah, well, he hated to see all of the flowers go to waste. Just what was against one wall would fill up their apartment.
Seriously, though, would you make sure that the nurses take the ones they want? I knew you'd feel that way. I have the cards collected so that we can send out thank you notes to everyone.
That was the thing about his mother. Hard times might have caused her to live on the streets for a while, but she was always polite. And always a lady. He realized she hadn't been exaggerating about the number of people asking about him once she started letting his visitors in. Dang, it was impressive. He'd never known before how many people cared about him. Funny, huh? Most of the time he felt like an outsider, sometimes even in his own home, but mostly at school and around other people. Looking at the visiting crowd coming in, maybe he wasn't as alone as he thought. Even Kyle Poitier and his dad came for a visit, as well as Casey Woods and Amber Cassidy, who'd been one of Brenna's best friends since kindergarten. And then the half of the football team that wasn't in Stone's pocket. It really stunned him, especially since they hadn't visited him in the hospital after he'd been shot. But then he'd interacted with them a lot more over this last year. Strange how much could change in only a few months. After they were all gone, Amy, Dev, Alex, Kara, and Mama and Papa Bear Peltier all came in together and brought him a chocolate chip cookie basket. Yeah, not to be rude, but folks could keep the flowers. Choco chip, now we're talking. Load me up till I burst, then bury me behind the Chips Ahoy factory. Dev tisked at him. Next time you want to play ping pong, I suggest you use a ball and not your head. Slim, you look awful.
Thanks, Dev. That was just the look I was going for. Got up this morning, glanced in the mirror, and said, Nick, you're just too dang handsome. You need to find us someone to kick the crap out of you and bruise you all over. That'll make you feel all better.
Amy laughed, then popped Dev in the stomach with her hand.
Holy cow, I think we may have found the one person in existence who can give you a run for your sarcasm. Go, Nick.
He didn't know why, but there was something about Amy that drew him to her. And it wasn't just because the blonde waitress was exquisitely gorgeous. For that matter, he didn't think of her like that at all. She was more like a big sister. One who could be really raw with people. He'd seen her take the heads off anyone who was rude to her or any of the waitstaff at Sanctuary. But when she wasn't riled, it felt good just to be in her presence.
I have bad news for you,
Papa Bear said in a serious tone. Dread rushed through him. Standing at a cool 7'3" and weighing in probably around 300 well-muscled pounds, Papa Bear Peltier was not someone you wanted to upset.
Sir?
Nick asked, scared of the answer. Papa Bear tisked.
Quinn unplugged the Gallagher machine. Your 900,000 score was erased.
Nick scrunched his face up. Oh, the humanity! I'll never score that high again! He groaned in miserable agony.
Papa, Dev teased, tell him the truth.
He grinned at Nick.
He had Quinn unplug it because he couldn't beat your score.
Papa Bear flashed an evil smile.
All right, I'll own that. But it'll teach you to get hurt and leave your successes unguarded, won't it?
Nick shook his head, grateful that was what had upset the bear. They all traded jokes with him for a while, then left. After they were gone, Wren came in alone. He hesitated in the doorway, something that probably sprang from the animal part of him. It was as if he respected other creatures' territory and didn't want to enter into it unless he planned to kill them. Not that he'd ever killed anyone, to Nick's knowledge, but the day wasn't over yet.
How do you feel?
Wren asked.
I'll live. Good.
Wren pulled the bills out of his pocket that Nick had given him and held them out for him to take. Nick frowned. What are you doing?
I appreciate the thought, Gaucher, but I don't need the money.
Dude, he chided, you're a busboy.
Yeah?
He said that like he didn't get what Nick was saying. Nick didn't want him to feel bad about what he did to earn a living, but Wren was probably not much older than he was, and he didn't seem to have any ambition to make more money. He would assume then that Wren needed every cent he made for whatever it was Wren did when he wasn't working, which wasn't often, but still.
I know the Peltiers pay well, but...
Wren's face twisted into a pained expression before it settled into a wry grin.
Nick, I don't work at Sanctuary for money. I don't have to.
What, you secretly loaded? Nick laughed. Are you on the lottery? With his head bowed low, Wren sheepishly rubbed his thumb down his cheek.
Nick? My last name is Targaryen, as in Targaryen Industries, Electronics, and a dozen other corporations that fall under our heading. I'm the sole heir to
all of it. Nick gaped. Oh yeah, if that was true, Wren was insane. Why in the world would you work as a busboy if you have all that money?
Money doesn't buy everything.
Then you ain't shopping in the right stores. Sorry, but having been poor most of my life, I stringently disagree. Because you swim in it, money may not work for you. For me, hello, Versace, Armani, and all those other highfalutin names I have to consult a dictionary to pronounce. Wren snorted.
I've never been poor, so I can't argue.
I'm sorry, my mind is so boggled right now. I can't imagine working if I had access to your inheritance. I just don't get it. Wren shrugged nonchalantly.
You could if you walked in my tracks. As my father used to say, everyone loves a self-made man, but they passionately resent his spoiled rich son, even when the son was never spoiled. When you have a lot of money, you don't have a lot of friends. Only people wanting a loan or scheming some way to take it from you, rather than work to get it themselves. Especially if you've inherited it. Then they feel justified plotting against you. After all, you didn't earn it, so you owe it to them.
He'd never thought about it that way. But Wren was right. He'd known his share of people who thought that very thing. Kids at school who would tell other students they should pay for their lunch because their parents had more money. You rich man, you can afford it.
His mom had never been that way, and she'd hammered her beliefs into him. You'll never be able to hold your head up with dignity so long as you hold your hand out for charity.
Wren held the money out again.
So please, take this back. While I deeply appreciate the gesture, I really can't keep it when I know you need it more than I do.
Nick took it and inclined his head respectfully at the gruff billionaire. What had life done to Wren that with all of his wealth, he'd rather live in a room at Peltier House, cleaning up after people, hauling around a monkey in his apron pocket, than travel the world and enjoy his money? You really couldn't look at anyone and tell much about them, where they'd come from, or what demons rode their souls with spurs on. And he remembered what Thorne had said, Everyone is in pain. No matter where they come from or what you think of them, sorrow spares no one, and scars respect no person. He also thought of Grimm's lesson. People put up shields in an attempt to protect themselves from harm, but one trigger word could breach those defenses and leave them bleeding on the floor. Nick knew for himself that words were far more damaging than any weapon. The body healed, and the scars faded, but the internal damage was eternal. It echoed any time you let your defenses fall. Even with the money he had access to now, he still felt like a hobo begging for handouts. Whenever he went to Brynna's house or Kirian's, he kept waiting for them to call the police to put the trash out on the street where it belonged. He had no way of knowing if that feeling would ever leave him. But he was learning not to gut himself over it like he used to. Every day, things got better. If anyone had told him a year ago that this would be his life in just a few short months, that his mother would have a job with people, or rather shapeshifters, who treated her like a lady, that he'd be hooked up with one of the prettiest girls in school, and that he'd have an apartment on Bourbon Street, he'd have laughed in their face. Yet that had become his life. All of it. Wren hesitated at the door. "You know, Nick, you're a real decent man, and there aren't many of them in this world. So do us a favor and don't get killed. There are too many jerks we need to off. We can't afford to lose someone who actually has manners."
"You sound like Caleb."
"Maybe we both have a little demon in us." And with that, Wren left. After the next round of friends, which included Brynna, who appeared a lot better mentally than she had the last time he'd seen her, Nick was ready to sleep. Until Bubba and Mark came in. Mark sighed as he scanned the room.
"God dang, Bubba, look at this place. Have you ever?"
"Nope, it's totally unprotected." He handed a satchel to Mark.
"Let's get started."
Nick frowned. "What are you two up to?"
"Pay us no nevers."
Bubba pulled the doctor's stool over to the window so that they could stand on it and start painting symbols with holy water on the wall above it.
"Hey, did you remember to get more salt?"
Mark asked. "Of course I did. What kind of demon zombie kit would it be if it didn't have salt in it?"
"Just checking. What with your mom coming in and it being this time of year and all, you haven't been as sharp as normal."
"Tell me about it, but I ain't totally dumb neither. I still have a modicum of intelligence. You want to grab the thistle and take care of the door?" Bubba might have his intelligence, but his sanity was still under debate. But then, after what they'd gone through over the last year, Nick wasn't about to chance it. If their seal could keep some of the things out he'd met in the nether realm, they could wrap him in tinfoil, shave his head, and call him Sue. Mark opened a bottle of something that smelled worse than his usual duck urine cologne. Even Bubba groaned.
"Mark, take a bath, son. You're stinking up the place."
"Uh-huh,"
Mark mocked.
"It's the sulfur stinking."
"Uh-huh, sure it is." Bubba snatched it from him and smelled it. Shaking his head and grimacing, he quickly put the cap back on.
"What? Dude," he sputtered. "Dog, this stuff smells like you after 3 days at Comic-Con. Are you trying to get us thrown out?"
Yeah, 'cause standing on the doctor's stool and painting holy water all over the walls would make them so happy, they might even offer them a job after they got out on probation. Nick whimpered as he continued to laugh over their antics, and it made his bruised sides ache. The two of them were priceless. He didn't know what was funnier, what they said or what they did. Unfortunately, just as Mark set fire to the thistle, the nurse came in. She let out a war cry before running to call security. Bubba and Mark started putting their things away. Given Bubba's height and muscled body, it always amazed Nick how fast he could move. Mark, on the other hand, was ripped but lean and wiry. You expected speed out of him.
"We got you covered, brother," Bubba said. "That should keep out almost anything. Now we're gonna haul before we get hauled out by security. My mama is just ornery enough to make me spend the night in lockup if I get caught again."
Nick laughed at the idea of a man the size of Bubba being so scared of someone as tiny as Dr. Burdett. until he remembered the fact that he was taller and thicker than his mother, too, and she scared the crap out of him. Yeah, okay, so he couldn't legitimately harass Bubba for momophobia. Whoever had said that the hand that rocked the cradle ruled the world must have had a southern, born and bred mother. Sobering, he inclined his head to them. Thanks, guys. I'll see you later. They ducked out the door like two spies, avoiding camera relays. Nick was still smiling when the nurse came back.
Where'd they go?
When unsure of how to respond, the best tactic? Stupid.
Who are we talking about?
She huffed at him.
You know, the men who were burning things in here, where are they?
I didn't see anyone burn anything. She glared, and he could swear he saw the promise of a painful shot in his future.
We'll find them, with or without you.
He wished her luck. One thing about those two, they were slipperier than a greased gator on the hunt in the bayou. Although the worst thing she could do was catch them. It'd be like trying to keep a cobra in a shoebox. Not a good idea. Grinning, Nick leaned back and closed his eyes. He turned his thoughts to something even better than two lunatics outrunning the authorities. Nakota. Instead of sending her off with Caleb to get some eats, he should have kept her here. He didn't know why, but the sight of her soothed him. No matter his bobo, she always made it better. At times, he thought he was in love with her. At others, how did anyone know for sure? Were there bells or whistles or what? Life really needed to come with cartoon bubbles over everyone to explain what was really going on inside their head. The saddest part, he didn't know anyone to ask about it. His mother had never been in love. Aside from him and his father, she refused to have any man near her. I ain't bringing no man around while I got a baby at home. Anyone hits my boo and I'll gut him. For the longest time, he'd felt guilty about that. But after what Cody told him, he knew the real reason why she didn't date or see men. And that broke his heart. Manyara would only give the standard, there are some things in the universe that defy explanation, but trust me, when it strikes you, you will know. Kyrian didn't want to talk about his wife. Ever. Asheron scoffed at the idea of love as the ultimate stupidity.
You know what love is, Nick. It's a woman's way of controlling the relationship and controlling you. In the wrong hands, it's the worst, most painful weapon imaginable. So when you give your heart away, make sure it's a mutual exchange. Because once you let them in, cutting them out again is like being gutted with a dull spoon.
He didn't want to know what had happened to Asheron to make him so jaded. Especially given the fact that Ash had died at age 21. To have that kind of hatred 11,000 years later. Yeah, someone had hurt Ash badly. The Werehunter shapeshifters had their mates chosen for them by the Fates, so they didn't really date like humans, and they definitely didn't have a choice or say in who their spouses were. The only people he knew who were married, he didn't feel comfortable enough to ask. Or they were divorced, which didn't bode well since they'd obviously made a mistake when they picked someone. But Cody, she made him feel things no one else did. He could be having the absolute worst day, and with one smile, she could make him forget all about it.
Did you enjoy your time in Asmodea?
Nick curled his lip at the familiar voice. Why would Ambrose bug him now? Couldn't he have 5 seconds to decompress before his insane older self came in to rough him up? Yawning, Nick answered without looking.
It certainly wasn't Disney World, unless Mickey sold his soul to Satan. Not that I've ever been to Disney World. Heck, I haven't even been to Six Flags, and it's just over the bridge.
The power from Ambrose made the hair on his arm stand on end. Ambrose's aura practically sizzled with its lethal capabilities.
I can't believe you got out of there in one piece. I had to betray the closest thing I've ever had to a friend to escape it.
A bad feeling went through Nick. While the voice was definitely Ambrose's, the story wasn't.
No,
it couldn't be. Opening his eyes, he saw a man who bore a frightening resemblance to Ambrose. Except this one had short, military-cut jet black hair, and he stood about 2 inches taller. Even more telling, he was covered with prison tattoos. Definitely not Ambrose. This was his father, Sokolay. Chapter 11. Nick tried to call for help, but he was completely paralyzed. He couldn't even blink. If he so much as thought about Cody or Caleb, a sharp pain pierced his brain. Was he being stabbed with an ice pick? His father gave him a crooked smile.
Oh, the powers that awaited you. The things you were born to do. Too bad you won't live long enough to experience any of them.
Fighting with everything he had, Nick did his best to break free. He couldn't. Never had he experienced anything like this. It was terrifying. Forget being force-choked by Vader. This was even more terrifying and debilitating.
If I get free, old man, you're gonna bleed.
Yeah, okay, so it most likely wouldn't be much of a fight, but he was gonna put up as much of one as he could. There literally was nothing he could do. Adarian's gaze was frigid as he moved to stand over Nick. He pressed his thumb against the inside corner of Nick's left eye. In his head, Nick screamed from the raw agony of it, but the sound wouldn't leave his throat. He was the only one who heard it. His father had him completely paralyzed.
That's it, Adarian whispered before he sucked his breath in with pleasure. Feed me with your pain. Let me bathe in it.
What are you doing, Chew? Nick's eyes widened at a Cajun insult he'd never heard his mother use before. In fact, she went into a full babillet on his hide, using words that shocked him and some he didn't even know she knew the meaning of. Her shrill voice ringing off the walls, she ran toward them. She actually slammed all of her body weight against Adarian to shove him away from the bed. Given the fact that she was about a foot and a half shorter and probably weighed less than one of Adarian's muscled thighs, her ability to move him was impressive.
You get away from him, you hear me?
She snarled through gritted teeth.
I just wanted to see him. He is my son, after all.
She backed Adarian into a corner like a chihuahua cowing a Doberman.
You shouldn't be here, and you know it. How are you here? I know you didn't make parole. No one's dumb enough to ever let you out again.
Adarian's gaze softened as he faced her anger without flinching.
I'd forgotten how beautiful you are.
He reached to cup her cheek. His mother slapped Adarian's hand away.
You are not going to touch me again, ever.
Nick kept trying to move or speak, but whatever Adarian had done to him, it was holding him solid. Averting his gaze with a glaze in his eyes that told Nick he was listening to the ether, Adarian went ramrod stiff. When he looked back at his mother, his face was a mask of disbelief.
You're the one who turned me into the cops after I robbed that bank, aren't you?
Yes, I did,
she said proudly between her clenched teeth, straightening up to her full height, which barely reached the middle of his father's chest.
I didn't care what you did to me, I didn't. But when you hit my baby, nuh-uh, it was on like Donkey Kong. Nobody touches my boy, not you, not anyone. He's all I got in this world, and I will slaughter you like a hog at Christmas if you even look askance at him again, you hear me?
Adarian appeared as stunned by her attack as Nick was.
You turned me in.
Disbelief haunted his voice.
I did, she repeated.
The hurt in his eyes was tangible, and it was telling. Adarian loved her.
Disgusting.
No, worse than that. His father's love was a perversion, because he's the Malachi. They weren't born to know that emotion. They were born to hate and to slaughter. That was what Thorne had told him. The only reason Nick had any concept of love was because of his mother's blood and the fact that she'd kept him and nurtured her baby. Nick was the only Malachi ever born who'd been shown love and who understood it. His father had no idea how to cope with it. For that matter, Adarian had probably never felt it for anyone else.
How could you?
Adarian's tone was more like a child being tortured by its parent. His mom shook her head at his continued confusion.
Are you?
Closing her eyes, she waved her hands around her face as if erasing a board.
Of course you're insane. I know that. Everybody knows that.
Biting his lip, Adarian held a light in his icy gaze that said he was one step away from hitting her. Nick fought his hold even harder. He had to protect his tiny mother from the bear of a man who had fathered him.
Is there a problem, Charisse?
Since the only part of his body he could control was his eyes, Nick turned his gaze to the door, where Kyrian stood in a major power stance that let everyone know he was more than willing to get bloody if he had to. Dressed in black from head to toe, he was almost the same size as his father, and he was every bit as buff. Kyrian's black sunglasses covered his eyes while he stood with his arms crossed over his chest. Adarian did the alpha strut as he closed the distance between them.
This doesn't concern you.
Kyrian didn't break his tough guy stance at all.
The hand you had on that lady says it does.
Adarian laughed.
You don't know who or what you're dealing with. And neither do you.
Kyrian's voice was as smooth and emotionless as if they were discussing the weather. It always amazed Nick that Kyrian could speak so easily without showing even the smallest hint of fang.
So if you want to dance with me, let's take it outside, where we have more room.
Invading Kyrian's personal space, Adarian was close enough to kiss him. Still, Kyrian didn't blink or flinch, and that in and of itself was a call-out to his father. Adarian raked Kyrian with a sneer.
You think you can take me?
Kyrian cocked an amused grin.
You're not the scariest thing I've ever seen, and you're definitely not the most powerful.
Adarian laughed.
There, you would be wrong.
Just as Nick was sure Adarian would attack, Asheron moved to stand directly behind Kyrian. His father's eyes widened as he took in Asheron's 7-foot height, 4 inches of which came from the thick-soled, flamed goth biker boots he wore. More than that, Asheron not only exuded lethal authority, anyone with a drop of paranormal blood in them knew he wasn't what he seemed. His powers surged in a way no one else's did. In the land of badass, Asheron reigned supreme. Adarian took one step back as if rethinking his position. After a few seconds, he turned his head to speak over his shoulder.
You can't keep me from my son, Charisse. He's my blood.
She shook her head.
No, he's not. He's my boy.
She put a long emphasis on the my part.
And I'm not sharing him with anybody. That includes you. I know you think I'm nothing, but I'm no longer the child I used to be, and I'm not afraid of you anymore.
She pointed at Nick.
That right there is the only family I have, and I love him with every part of me. You touch him ever again, and one of us will die. I promise you that. You can take it to the bank and spend it.
A tick beat a fierce rhythm in Adarian's cheek, and the promise in his eyes was loud and clear. He would be back. Sucking air between his teeth in a frightful hiss, Adarian brushed roughly past Kyrian and Asheron. As soon as he was gone, his mother's legs buckled, and she headed to the floor. Moving with preternatural speed and power, Kyrian caught her against him. It was only then that Nick could move again.
Breathe easy, Charisse,
Kyrian said, scooping her up in his arms so that he could carry her to the recliner by the window. Gently, he set her in it and took 2 steps back. She fanned her flushed face with a shaking hand.
I don't know what got into me. He could have killed me. I'm surprised he didn't.
You're a mother who loves her child, who was protecting her son.
Asheron quirked a twisted grin.
That makes you the most dangerous creature on the planet. I'd face down a team of SEAL-trained mass murderers any day over one pissed-off mom of any species protecting her young, believe me.
Tucking his hands into the pockets of his spiked motorcycle jacket, Asheron paused next to Nick.
What did he want?
Nick let out a long breath.
I don't know.
I really don't. His mom launched herself from the chair to his bed so that she could check on him.
Did he hurt you, baby? Why didn't you call me?
I couldn't. He had a Vulcan death grip of some kind on me. I couldn't move or do anything.
His mom brushed the hair back from his brow. Well, he's gone now, and we're done with him. I don't ever want to see him again.
Kieran nodded.
We'll make sure he stays away from both of you.
She turned and offered him a grateful smile. I can't thank you enough, Mr. Hunter. I know it's not your place. God love you for your decency. You've been so good to us.
Her heartfelt praise made him bristle. Nick had noticed that Kieran, in spite of having been a prince when he was a human in ancient Greece, didn't like to be thanked.
I believe in helping people out whenever I can. I know you and Nick don't really have anyone to watch over you, and while you're both very capable, we all need a cavalry once in a while.
His mom nodded. I hate admitting it, but you're right. It's not in me to ask for help for nothing.
She glanced from Kieran to Asheron.
And with the two of you and Menyara, I never have to.
Tears welled in her eyes.
Mama?
Blinking against her tears, she took Nick's hand.
I'm okay, baby. It's been a very emotional day. A lot has happened, and a roller coaster ride is making me a little sick to my stomach. But don't you worry about me, boo. I'm all right.
Yeah. His mom had a core of steel unlike anyone he'd ever known. Asheron dropped his backpack by the bed.
Why don't you go on to work, Kieran? I'll take the first shift of Nick watch duty.
He inclined his head to Asheron, then turned to Nick's mom.
If you need anything, call me.
I will, thank you.
Anytime.
Kieran knuckle-bumped Nick.
Take care, Cajun. And if you don't stop getting hospitalized, I'm gonna start docking your pay.
Yeah, and I'll start scratching your car paint. Kieran laughed.
You know I value my cars over your life, right?
I don't believe it for a minute,
Nick called out as he left. But Kieran didn't respond. His mom patted his hand.
You know, this got me thinking, boo. You do need to learn to drive. If you'd been in a car going to Liza's, none of this would have happened.
Joy rushed through him.
You're gonna teach me?
She visibly cringed.
Yes,
she said, in the most pathetic tone ever. Asheron laughed.
Would you like me to teach him?
She cringed even more.
It's okay, Mrs. Gaucher. I don't care if he bangs up my car, and I'm really, really patient when teaching people. Especially those with hot heads. I've been training folks for years.
Man, that was an understatement. It was all Nick could do not to burst into laughter. His mother scanned Ash with a doubting stare.
You don't look old enough to have been doing anything for years.
If his mom only knew the truth.
Please, Mom, Nick begged. No offense, but I think I'd rather have Ash do it too. He won't be screaming or grounding me if I make a mistake.
She opened and closed her mouth as if she wanted to argue, but she knew the truth as well as he did.
Fine, but if I had a Porsche, there's no way I'd ever let a 15-year-old in it, never mind drive it.
Asheron scoffed.
He won't be learning in my Porsche. It's a standard. I think it'd be best to teach him in an automatic. Let him get used to the feel of the car and traffic rules before we complicate it with a gear shift. Last thing King ADD needs is one more distraction.
Hey, Nick protested. I'm not that. Hey, did you see that?
He pointed to the wall as a joke.
Uh-huh,
Ash said.
So, whose car will you use to train him in? His mom asked.
One of my others.
His mom quirked a brow at that.
Others? How many cars do you own?
Ash stroked the side of his face with his fingers.
A lot.
You don't know?
She asked, aghast.
Not really. Most are kept in storage, and I have them delivered when I want to drive them.
She pinned him with that suspicious look that meant she thought he was a drug dealer or a car thief.
What do you do again for a living?
Wrangle people.
Her eyes widened.
You work in the sex trade?
No!
Ash practically roared that word. Nick sucked his breath in. There was one of Grimm's trigger words. Wow, that was a violent reaction. He'd never seen Ash explode like that to anything. His breathing labored. Ash clenched his teeth, then seemed to get a hold of himself.
Sorry. That's a subject I take very seriously. Children should be protected, not...
His nostrils flared.
Anyway, I train and consult personal security personnel.
Nick was impressed with Ash's spin on what Dark Hunters did. Personal security personnel. For the whole world.
Why do you call it wrangling?
Ash shrugged.
My people get moved around a lot. The logistics can get hinky at times. I have several coming into town for Halloween, in fact, and it's why I'm not always here. I travel a lot to different cities and countries where we have staffs.
His mother's jaw gaped.
That's so impressive, especially for your age. How old are you exactly?
Nick arched his brow, waiting to see what Ash would come back with.
Older than I look, Mrs. Gaucher. Much older than I look.
Yeah, he looked like he was in his late teens. No one would believe he was an ancient Atlantean who was over 11,000 years old.
She smiled. I understand. I don't like giving out my age either. Sorry to be so personal, but I feel even better having you here now that I know what it is you do. Have you ever had to deal with someone as special as Nick's father?
Acheron burst out laughing. Hard.
Yeah. All the time. My people specialize in the truly unruly.
Good. She stepped away from the bed. If you two will excuse me, I'm going outside to make a call to Manyara. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Take your time, Mrs. Gaucher.
Call me Charisse, she said with a smile. I think we all know I was never married, but I appreciate the gesture, thank you.
Anytime, Charisse.
After she left, Acheron sat in the recliner.
So what went down?
With my dad?
No, the mugging.
Nick sighed.
I don't know. There's some weird crap going around my school.
Please tell me it's not zombies again.
Nick laughed. No, Maddox's been banned from making games. If his brother Eric ever finds one again, he has a giant magnet he's gonna set down on Maddox's prize computer.
Ouch.
Exactly. Not that Maddox needed the thread. He learned his lesson quite well. Acheron nodded.
I imagine so. Anyway, back to school. What's going on?
Someone has set up a website, and they're posting garbage about my classmates. Mostly made up, but enough truths to make it look authentic. Now students are going at each other's throats over it.
Akrata.
Bless you. Ash laughed, this time giving Nick a flash of his elongated fangs.
In Atlantean, the Hecrata were the children of Polly, the god of strife, and Diaphonia, the goddess of discord. Their grandfather was Misos, the Atlantean god of war and death. Before wars broke out, the Atlantean gods would unleash the Hecrata to stir up emotions and get the people ready to attack each other.
That had to be the coolest accent in the world. There was nothing to compare it to, but in spite of the fact that Acheron was male, Nick loved to hear him speak his native language.
How do you say that? Eka encha encharada enchilada?
You have to catch and roll the uvula in the back of your throat on the R's, so it's hek-ra-ta.
Yeah, I'm gonna quit before I embarrass myself. So, were they human in appearance? Ugly snot monsters, or what?
They were extremely beautiful. At least on the outside. Inside, Hecrata literally means she who stirs excrement.
Nick burst out laughing.
What? Are you serious?
Acheron nodded.
I swear. In my day in Atlantis, men were respected. Women were feared. And for good reason. Hell hath no fury.
Nick agreed with that. Women and girls carried a grudge like nobody's business. Sue Tilling was still mad at him for bumping into her on the playground in kindergarten.
I have to say they scare the crap out of me most days. Cody can render me speechless with the raising of one eyebrow.
Exactly. Men can beat each other to a pulp and still walk away friends. With a woman, once an enemy, always an enemy. Women will sit like a spider for years, waiting for the chance to strike. They never forget and seldom forgive.
Nick cringed. You're scaring me, Ash.
Sorry, but just remember this. No woman has ever killed a man while he was washing dishes.
Nick scowled at him. What?
It's another Atlantean saying. If you keep the woman happy, she's less likely to cut your throat.
Man, y'all were whacked. So what did these troublemaking, excrement-stirring goddesses do?
The kind of stuff you're talking about at your school. They'd go in and tell someone secrets and claim they'd heard them from someone else, usually a friend. Or they just make things up to break apart friendships and homes. It was what they lived for. They'd go to humans and whisper in their ears, playing off their fears. Sometimes it was overt, and other times it would be as subtle as saying, "Hey, Nick, I saw Cody this afternoon when at the mall. Man, she's looking really happy these days. And her friend Tom she was with, wow. You could tell he was loaded. Expensive clothes, Rolex. He was so impressive and smart."
How would that upset me?
Let's say that Cody had told you she couldn't be with you that same afternoon because she had to study.
Yeah, okay. That would not make me happy. Acheron nodded.
And you'd probably fight with her over it, especially if she hadn't done it. You'd think she was lying about it, and she'd think you didn't trust her.
Nick let out a low whistle. He could see where that would get ugly, fast. It's kind of like an evil silk speech. Ash stiffened for a second.
How do you know what silk speech is?
Nick let his Cajun accent out in all its glory. I'd be hanging with me some goths. That placated him.
Silk speech isn't just the tool of demons and gods. Well, it's potent in their hands. It's deadliest when in the hands of a human who's incapable of feeling happiness. Or worse, one who takes happiness by hurting others. Jealous people who trade in gossip and who feel the need to take someone down a notch so they can feel superior.
Oh, I know people like that.
Sadly, Nick, we all do.
Yeah. And it was sad. The nurse came in to glare at Nick. Those men got away, but I will find out who they were. What were they doing in here anyway? Protecting me? From what? She asked, arms akimbo. Acheron arched a curious brow. Nick didn't want to tell her or Ash about the demon part, so... There's an escaped felon trying to kill me. There. The truth, with vague details. The Ehrata might excel at lies, but Nick excelled at creative truth. Something that was a talent in and of itself. I'll warn security about this. She checked his IV bag, then put a needle into it. Acheron cocked his head.
What are you giving him?
Just a small sedative. One that was already kicking in. Man, it was strong. The room blurred. He heard Acheron saying something, but he couldn't make it out at all. Freaky weird. It was even making him hallucinate. Instead of seeing the nurse, he saw his father. No, wait. That was his powers kicking in. The nurse was his father. Nick tried to speak, but couldn't. All he could hear was the sound of him coding as he passed out.
Chapter 12. Come home, child, and be rewarded.
Nick heard that tender voice. It was feminine, but not his mother's. Warmth suffused him as he tried to find that unseen woman through the darkness that enveloped him.
Fight her, Nick!
That was Cody.
Think of me, baby, and come toward my voice.
Nick hesitated. It wasn't in him to blindly follow anyone.
How do I know it's you? You know me, Nick.
Yeah, but he wasn't stupid, any more than he was trusting.
If you're really Cody, tell me where we met. In school.
That was a vague and safe bet. Where in school?
In class, silly.
He made the sound of a warning buzzer. And for the $1 million question,
You're absolutely wrong. No Nick for you, jerkweed.
Now he was being cursed by a man's gruff voice. In the back of his mind, he wondered if that might be Noir, but there was no way to know for sure. And he wasn't about to ask, since the last thing he wanted was for the Dark God to get any kind of boost to his powers.
Nick?
He jumped at the sound of Cody's voice right behind him. A dull, greenish light flared so that he could see her, only his mind locked up over the way she was dressed. Her brown hair was pulled back from her face and held high on her head in an intricate braid, with the majority of her hair falling down her back. She had a leather halter with fringe hanging down the front and back. Her short leather skirt was also fringed, and leather bands that held sheaths were wrapped around her arms and thighs, along with another sword and sheath that she wore diagonally across her back. Ringed with heavy black eyeliner, her green eyes were the color of deep emeralds. She smiled at him before she chucked him lightly on the chin.
Close your mouth, baby, you're drooling.
He probably was. Any normal heterosexual 15-year-old would.
My baby is hot.
Then he remembered the masquerade trick.
You are my baby, right?
She handed him his sword and grimoire.
Yes, I am.
Only the real Cody would have known to bring those to him, and where he kept them. Grateful she knew him so well, he took his weapons, then heard the sound of something beating loud and fierce in the sky above them.
Where are we?
The Fringe Realm. She said that like he should know exactly what she was talking about, but he had no clue. I don't understand. Where's the Fringe Realm? What's the Fringe Realm?
Think of it like a protective membrane that keeps the worlds within their respective boundaries.
Nick placed one hand over his ear as the sound became louder. And what's causing that? Before she could answer, that attacked. They were like flying monkeys that had mated with dragons. Their bodies were more humanoid, yet their faces were dragon-shaped, and their pale, tan skin made of scales. Large fangs curled like tusks out of their mouths. Cody flipped around his back to catch the first one that reached them with a sword stroke. The others descended on them, rapidly. Pulling his sword hilt out, he held it in his palm and imagined it the size of a Scottish claymore. It quickly shot to that size so that he could fight. His heart pounding, he stood at Cody's back as they fought against the beasts.
Don't let them separate us, Cody warned.
I'm not letting them do anything. They definitely had the home team advantage and were making use of it.
I'm not going to be kibble today.
At least, that was the intention. But intending something and being able to do it, much easier said than done. Nick crouched low as one of the Dramonks came at him. He rose up and stabbed it in the middle of its chest. Screaming, it twisted around and reached a huge claw toward him. One second, he thought he was a goner, and the next, Cody pulled him back and was between them. Instead of grabbing him, it got her. She cried out in agony and anger as it snatched her from the ground and launched toward the black sky, clutching her in its claws. In that moment, a rage he'd never felt before came over him. His vision dimmed as words formed themselves in his mind. When he spoke them aloud, they came out as a guttural growl in a language he knew without ever having been taught it.
She is mine. Let nothing touch her save the ambrosious Malachi.
The words rolled out like a sonic boom that shook the air around and the ground beneath him. He let the words continue to fill the ether until he merged with it.
The ether is yours to command. Breathe, Ambrosius, breathe. Let it empower you. It is your blood, your lineage, your right.
Nick felt it seep inside him, thick and heady. Something entered his mouth. It tasted like blood, but instead of repulsing him, he craved it. Leaning his head back, he drank his fill, and with every swallow he became stronger and stronger.
Death is my friend. He walks to my right. War walks to my left. I am their commander, and I am the one they serve. And Cody was his chosen one. No one took from him, not without paying with their lives.
Lowering his head, he threw his arms out, spanned his black wings, and launched himself toward her. One of Noir's larger pets came at him. He shot a blast of fire at it. With one shrill scream, it burst apart.
Nick ignored everything as he closed the distance between him and Cody. Cody saw the shadow that darkened the creature clutching her. She looked up, expecting another enemy. What she found was so much worse. Nick had converted to the Malachi. His skin was black and red, swirled together into a beautiful pattern that faded into his ebony wings. His eyes were a vibrant reddish yellow, and yet he was still incredibly handsome. In that instant, she saw the real reason why he had to be saved. He was unique, his mother's blood and his father's. He was a creature unto himself, a creature of hatred, nurtured by love. One who would fight his own to save her life. No other Malachi would ever do such. Flying with incredible speed, he grabbed the Gritale by its head and snapped its neck. It let go of her. Cody fell through the dark sky, until a hand caught hers. Her heart pounding, she stared into the face of ultimate death, into the blazing eyes of a creature known for its merciless cruelty. The Malachi has no heart. It can feel nothing but hatred. It thrives on it. It seeks to feel it even when it shouldn't. That is its mother's milk. Its only pleasure comes from consuming the blood of its enemies. For the first time, she feared him. Nick placed her on a ledge above the cavern they'd been in, and as he rose, jet black armor covered him. Dark gunmetal spikes glistened from the shoulders. His hands were now vicious claws. From his left shoulder, there were three pendulums that fell down the front of his body. One for the past, one for the present, and one for the future. The epaulets came down to the juncture of his biceps, where they formed a sharp point. And in the middle rose a deep, blood-red stone. A stone that had been named the Eye of the Dragon. They charged him and kept his armor invincible.
He's even conjured the suit.
Nick was too young to know how to do that. It normally took a Malachi years to master this much power. And when the others came in to attack, Nick exploded them with his fire blasts. When the last creature had disintegrated, Nick turned toward her. In the dim light, she saw his eyes flash red. His features perfectly formed, he didn't look 15. She saw the man he would soon be. No, she saw the Malachi. Eyes that flashed from red to yellow to blue and back again, until they finally settled on their human blue. Ironically, that was more eerie than when they'd been yellow or red. It made him look human, vulnerable, things the Malachi could never be. He stalked toward her with a hatred blazing in those eyes that left her trembling. She braced herself to fight, but just as she would have lifted her sword, it went flying from her hands, torn out of her grasp by an unseen force.
Nick?
He tilted his head as if he didn't understand her. Flashing his fangs, he seized her by the throat and shoved her back against the rock wall. Cody grabbed his wrist, trying to force him to let go. Shrieking, she used every piece of strength she had. It wasn't enough.
Help me.
Nick smelled the blood of the woman he held. It was stronger than human. Heady. Sweet. He wanted to sink his fangs in and taste it, to hear her beg for his mercy.
We don't hurt people.
That voice. It was vaguely familiar. Like the woman he held.
Kill her!
He tightened his grip.
Nick!
She choked out.
Nick! Please!
Nick. He looked at his hand. The skin was a swirling pattern of red and black. No, not his hand, a stranger's hand. Confused, he frowned at the woman he seemed to know. Memories surged, or were they dreams? He wasn't sure. Until she reached up and laid one tender hand on his cheek. That one soft touch, light as a feather's kiss, shattered the anger and hatred he felt. His eyelids were suddenly heavy. But as he lowered them, he remembered her touch, her taste.
Cody.
He breathed her name like a prayer, even though his demon's voice rattled like thunder over the river. He allowed her to pull his hand away from her throat. bracing himself for her attack, he felt his hatred surging again, until she kissed the hand he'd had around her throat. Cody knew she had to move slowly. In this form, Nick was little more than an angry toddler in the body of the most lethal being ever born. At this stage, the Malachi controlled him, and not the other way around. He trembled as he cupped her cheek with his clawed hand.
"You remember me?"
she asked. Nodding, he dipped his head toward hers. Even in his demon's form, Cody welcomed his kiss. She should hate him, and yet even like this, she saw the real him. And it wasn't a monster. Her Nick could love. And most of all, he held her heart. Nick breathed her in as she kissed him, and his senses reeled. He was a creature of hate and brutality. She was a creature of light and tenderness. It was in his blood to destroy her kind. Only he didn't want to. Especially not when she wrapped her arms around his shoulders and held him close against her. And then she started singing to him in a low tone, her breath tickling his ear. A soft berceuse like his mother used to sing to him when he'd been a child. He let the sound of her voice and the softness of her hand in his hair wash over him. It bathed him in something even warmer than his hatred. He was fully content to stay here. Until a sharp stabbing pain bisected his chest. Cody pulled away with a gasp. As soon as she did, she saw the spear that was shoved into his back so deeply it protruded from his chest. Nick staggered. The agony was unlike any pain he'd ever known. It drove him to his knees.
Baby?
The horror in her green eyes told him that she wasn't a part of this attack. For some reason, that strengthened him. Turning, he saw the one who'd stabbed him. His father. Growling, he lowered his head so that he could hone in his demon's sight on the one who'd wounded him. Adarian put his thumb on the center of Nick's forehead as he'd done before. Only this time, Nick didn't feel the piercing pain.
"Sorry, son, but I need..."
His father didn't get to finish that sentence. Nick had broken off the blade protruding from his chest and used it to stab Adarian.
"Never underestimate a backwoods Cajun in a fight, old man."
He shoved Adarian back. Gaping, Adarian caught himself. He looked down at the gaping wound Nick had left in his abdomen, then back at him. His own blood covered his hands. Nick licked his lips as the smell hit him. Whenever one Malachi consumed another, he took his powers, his strengths, but none of his weaknesses. If he were to mix Adarian's with his... He laughed. No one would ever be able to command him then. He wouldn't have to fear Noir or anyone else. With that thought foremost in his mind, he took a step forward. Adarian turned and vanished. Nick started after him, but just as he spread his wings to take flight, he felt that precious hand on his arm.
"Let him go."
Still, he didn't listen. Not until her lips grazed his. That shattered his bloodlust and started a new fire inside him. Cody smiled at him, then grimaced as if something pained her. It was only then he realized that his father's spear had gone straight through him into Cody. No. Not her.
"Nakota?"
Her legs buckled. Nick scooped her up in his arms. Her blood was smeared across his armor and her beautiful skin. Her features paled. She lifted her hand to touch his lips.
"Your blood is poison to my kind."
His stomach shrank. "I'll get you help."
"You can't. I can't go to a human doctor."
She closed her eyes.
"Stay with me,"
he growled fiercely. A small tear fell down her cheek, one that ripped him apart. She was always so tough and larger than life that he forgot just how tiny she was. She barely weighed anything in his arms.
"You're a creature of death, Nick. You can't command me to live. That power doesn't belong to you."
Unimaginable grief tore through him as he